You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app, Seattle Sports everything. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for joining us on a Monday morning. Light out when I woke up this morning, or at least when I left for work. That's pretty good.
It's good. I was going to say, what time did you wake up?
I woke up at 5. Was that a problem?
It's good that you're here.
I do live very close to work, so I can wake up fairly close to the time I get here. I mean, I probably get out of bed at 4:35 and walked in here just after 5, so I don't know, half hour. It's a pretty quick shower and, you know, out the door process.
No, that's not what I mean.
Oh.
I'm just saying, I'm glad you made it here.
Oh, you're glad I made it here. Yes, it was quite the day on Friday. Poor Maura. I was very, very embarrassed about this whole process. I can see the blushing starting in the other room.
We spent a lot of segments on this last week. I thought maybe we were going to get past it, but Justin had to.
I'm sure there's people thinking about it.
You don't think people wanted sort of the postscript to my surgery on Friday? I'm fine. Thank you. I'm here. It was a very relaxed weekend. I'll have some stories over the course of the morning for you. But it was not that painful. I am not in that much pain. Some discomfort, definitely some odd discomfort during the process. But after that day, I mean, no issues. Taking a bunch of a leave.
All right.
And a lot of rest and relaxation. The better news, the more important news that I know everyone has been waiting for. My daughter Avery killed in the debut premiere of Shrek Jr. on Friday night or Saturday night.
I got an equal amount of texts about that as I did.
I'm sure. Yes, I know. I got some very, very direct tweet questions from people wondering how various parts of my body were and using mostly words that I won't repeat here on the radio. But for the most part, all of my bits and pieces are doing okay.
You won't use those words, but
we're ready to move forward. All right. It was a good weekend, too, as a sports fan. By the way, for me, fantastic. I just sat around watching golf most of the weekend. Jordan Spieth ready for Southern Hills this weekend. Pretty excited. But mostly just a first road win for the Mariners. So couple of parts to the Mariners weekend to get to. And you probably have to start before any of the games, right? Because we'd been talking about this for so long. And finally, on Friday, they end up making the announcement. 8 different roster moves, right? Guys shuttled all over the place. And number one, most important there, was sending Jared Kelnick back down to AAA. It had to happen, right? And I had circled that date for you guys probably, a week earlier? And saying, okay, probably giving Kelnick until the off day. They played 16 straight games, 16 straight days leading up to Thursday's off day. And you kind of had that date circled of like, okay, this is going to be probably do or die date for Kelnick. And I know they wanted him to sort of take that leap forward. They wanted him to show them something to make them keep him on the roster, right? Because they don't want to have to make a move. They don't have they don't have Mitch Haniger. They don't have Kyle Lewis ready to go. The last thing in the world Jerry wants to do is take another potential, starting major league outfielder off of the roster. But he didn't have a choice. He just didn't do enough in leading up to that week or during that week to warrant being on the major league team. And so they ended up needing to make some moves that I'm sure they didn't want to make. I'm sure they didn't want to DFA Johan Ramirez, right, who they've had some hope for. They kept him on the roster all year. Last year is a Rule 5 pickup, right? I mean, they've invested into that prospect. Well, unfortunately, they had to let him go because at some point you can't continue to let Kelnick flounder at the big league level, both for his development and for the success of the team. It just wasn't right. And I'm sure if I'm Kelnick, I'm probably upset. I'm probably most upset that I had to fly all the way to New York only to find out that I'd been sent back, and now I got to fly all the way back to Tacoma. But, they didn't know that they could make move after move after move, and so that's unfortunately how it goes, and, that's just sort of the reality of the situation. I think they did the right thing, unequivocally. I'll say that a bunch of times today. This was the right thing to do with Jared Kelnick. In no way does it tell me that he's not going to be a successful major leaguer. I think he will. I think, right? I mean, I still believe in the kid, but you have to do this for his own development. He needs his confidence back. He needs to go crush some terrible AAA pitching in ballparks that are conducive to hitting in. Remember that he's got good hands. Remember that he's fast enough. Remember that he can hit a fastball, and then go back in, lock and load, and start tearing up major league pitching the way he did last year. And I think that's what's so important to say. This is not a case where it's like, he just can't hit major league pitching. He can hit major league pitching. I know because I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I know because I saw it over the course of over a month last year that Jared Kelnick can do damage to major league pitching. He needs to remember that for himself. Go back down, rediscover it, come back up and do his thing.
I sure missed his outfield defense over the weekend.
I know, yeah.
I mean, that was such a glaring, and it's ball finds you, right? Like, yep. The second somebody else goes out in that position.
But they have Adam Frazier out there at some point, right? The ball finds him. Steven Souza did make a nice play.
He got did himself that around. Really, really good catch. But man, one dropped right out of his glove.
Yep.
The miscommunication with Julio. You realize that there's so much more that goes into that, playing that much time with somebody in the outfield.
Yeah.
And I mean, big stage, Steven Souza. Hey, by the way, you're in New York now.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, he's a veteran. I mean, he's been around the game for a while. It's not like you brought up some 24-year-old kid and you're like, throw him into the Mets, ringer there. But, you know, he's 30-something years old. He's been around the game for 6-7 years as a major leaguer. So, yeah, I'm sure just kind of getting his shot again and playing for his hometown team, right? Guy grew up a Mariner fan.
Yeah.
And an opportunity to go play for the M's is pretty cool. So, Jared Kelnick's going to be one big focus today. The other is probably, and somewhat surprisingly, Jesse Winker. I did not know of the history between Jesse Winker and Mets fans. I didn't realize that they went back a while, that they hated him even when he was in Cincinnati.
I didn't either.
That he loves the fact that they hate him and goes back and forth with them.
Yep.
There's a lot of waving and smiling and taunting. I didn't know that he would end up getting into it with some random lefty Mets reliever named Shreveport or something. Shreveport, whatever the heck the guy's name is. I was not expecting any of that, and I was glued, as you can imagine. For anybody who's listened to me over the years, you know that one question I have for the skipper every year, either on air or off. You guys getting into a fight this year? Are we going to finally see a base clearing brawl? I've lived in Seattle since 2009. In that time, the Mariners have had a grand total of 0.
I thought 2009 it did.
0.
Wow.
Bench clearing brawls. None. Zip. 0. Zilch. Never has it happened. Not a punch thrown. Not a mound charged. Not an outfield, a wash with relievers sprinting in from the dugout. Not one time has it happened. We thought there was a chance after Jared Weaver, quote unquote, drilled Kyle Seager with a 45-mile-an-hour fastball.
Mm-hmm.
We thought there was a chance a couple of times with Russell Branyon. There was hope. What was the guy they got, the first baseman from the A's that everybody hated? I forget the guy's name. Think of it.
And there was last season with the Yankees. That was close.
Right. Like, there were some moments where it looked like maybe enough tension would build. And I was glued when Shreve came into the game again yesterday to see Winker a second time. I'm like, oh, there's a chance. And then Winker, of all things, after, so if you missed it on...
Was it Ryan Healy, by the
way? No, everybody loved Ryan Healy is the other guy. Winker hit a home run and pimped it, right? He walked out, and then Shreve started yelling at him to move it along. And then yesterday, Shreve comes in to face Winker, and I'm like, okay, here we go. Anything is possible. And of all things, it's set up perfectly. Winker hits a ball back to the pitcher, right?
Uh-huh.
So now they're kind of coming close to each other near the first baseline as Winker's running up the baseline and Shreve is kind of moving closer to first base to throw it. And I feel this is the perfect opportunity for Shreve to start yelling at him and this and that. Not that I think Winker's a fighter, but at some point, if a guy calls you out, maybe there's... No, nothing. Shreve just takes the ball, runs away. It's like, what a disappointment. So I'll get more into the deal with Jesse Winker because I do think it's important that we saw what we saw from him. Not just that he came alive with the bat, but also I think some of his trash talk may rub off on this team a little bit. So a lot of great things from the Mariners weekend. They were back in action. They start a really, really important road trip with a series win. We'll tell you everything going on with them. Seahawks, and then what, 4 Game 7s yesterday? It was quite a weekend. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, to say the Mariners needed to win the series in New York was about as much of an understatement as you could make in May anyway. But after losing five straight series, facing a very challenging road trip, taking two of three in Queens, huge, humongous. Throw whatever word you want onto it. Lots of heroes. Let's start, though, with Julio because he was pretty special yesterday.
Sharif stares home. He sets, now fires. Swing it. This is a rocket deep out to left field. Canna's watching, and this ball is gone. Torched by Julio, number two this year for the Mariners rookie. It was obliterated out to left field. Julio Rodriguez has tied this game in the sixth inning with his second career home run. We're even at five.
I don't know if you get into the whole exit velo thing, but 114 miles an hour off the bat, it was scorched to left field, gone as soon as he hit it. 4-for-4 he goes yesterday with that home run. This, after being held hitless in the first two games of the series, continues to show what I would call a very mature approach and is definitely learning how to produce runs. Drove in another run by going the other way later in the game. Let's also throw some credit around. Ty France, 5-for-13 in the series. Jesse Winker, 5-for-12. Marco Gonzalez matching Max Scherzer on Friday night. Paul Sewald going back into New York. A member of the Mets had given up on him. He was tremendous in his two outings. Left for dead, though, Diego Castillo throwing nine straight sliders yesterday to get two straight strikeouts and end the series. Maybe got the two biggest outs of the entire series. I thought that was pretty impressive as well. Friday afternoon, of course, decision day, as we've been saying here for a week or so. And yes, it was time for Jared Kelnick to be sent down to AAA. Scott Servais explains.
You know, we met with Jared this morning, and I thought he handled it very well. Certainly wasn't happy with the news, but he understands where he's at. He knows how important it is for him to be able to contribute to our team. And right now, he's just not contributing the way that he knows he can.
Yeah, doing everything other than hitting, right? Give the kid credit. He played some good defense. He ran around the base as well. But you got to hit if you want to stay in Major League Baseball. He needs to go get his confidence back, so I like the move. It had to happen. One of eight that they made, they called up Steven Souza. Mike Ford is expected. They DFA'd Johan Ramirez to make room in the roster. And again, unequivocally the right thing to do. The best thing for both the team and for Kelnick's personal journey. The kid needs to hit. And I'd leave him down there for a little while and really let him get the confidence back. I would be surprised, not shocked, but surprised if we saw him before the All-Star break.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
So the more I think about it, the more I really like what the Seahawks did in the second round of the draft in particular. They took two risks, and both have very clear downsides. Both have comps that will scare every Seahawk fan. In the case of Boye Mafe, it's Aaron Curry, right? That's the fear. Another physically freaky outside linebacker who had limited production, right? Questions about his football instincts, and it ended up costing him once he got to the NFL. With Ken Walker, probably the fear of him being another Rashad Penny, overdrafted, production limited by injury, you shouldn't draft a running back high, et cetera, et cetera. And I think those are fair worries. They're fair. But here's what you should remember. Both Curry and Penny were not second-round picks. They were first-round picks, and in the case of Curry, the number three overall pick. Drafting players with enormous talent and upside potential like Mafe, that's what the second round is for, not number three. That's where you want to get a sure thing. But at number 40, you can absolutely afford to take a risk on somebody who might bust but has the opportunity for an enormous boom. So taking a productive running back in the second round, smart as well. That's where you find guys like that. Difference makers at that position are crucial, especially when your coach wants to run the ball. So yeah, I really like what they did in the second round. Speaking of the coach, he may have a new moniker. You can now call him Dr. Carroll. Pete receiving an honorary doctorate of business administration this weekend from his alma mater, the University of Pacific. So congratulations to Coach Dr. Carroll.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, two fantastic overtime endings in the NHL last night in Game 7. Both series needed Game 7, and then even that wasn't enough to settle things. Rangers beat the Penguins with a little bit of controversy at the ending of that one. And then it was Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau, netting the game winner for the Flames to put away Dallas.
Gaudreau in front, feeds a pass to Leno, stopped by Ottinger, took it up high. Gaudreau scores!
I guess when your name is Johnny Hockey, you're just destined for moments like that. What a fantastic nickname. Great scene there, too, in Calgary. as they not only had the entire building rocking, but the outside air. I mean, God, they love hockey up there. Not a terrible day for Dallas, though. I know they lost that one. The Mavs, though, did crush Phoenix in their Game 7. They'll advance and take on the Warriors, Celtics, Heat, after Boston destroyed Milwaukee yesterday as well. And then a very exciting end to the AT&T Byron Nelson, also held in Dallas. KH Lee holding off Jordan Spieth to win a second straight at that event. But personally, despite my love for Jordan, I'm very excited. PGA Championship starts Thursday in Oklahoma at Southern Hills, and Jordan is playing great golf, looks to complete the career Grand Slam. That's everything you need to know. Do it every hour, quarter past the hour. I did spend a lot of time watching golf this weekend, not going to lie.
I imagine that's true, but Jordan,
with,
you said
all
that,
those game sevens.
Well, I don't have TBS or TNT, thanks to you, Jim Oakes, convincing me to get this stupid FUBO thing.
I don't know why you got it. Jim Oakes. Told you I thought it was way too expensive, and the only reason I got it was so that I could watch the Mariners and Kraken. I don't know why I didn't sell you on that.
But it's cheaper than what I had before, right? Before I had DirecTV, and it's cheaper than that. And the one thing...
But at least with DirecTV, you get a bunch of other stuff.
I'm aware, yes. But the one problem is that it doesn't have TNT and TBS, and that it's great. I've realized I've now had it for like 3 weeks. I've realized that other than occasionally watching games on ABC or CBS, I've only really watched two channels. I watch Root and I watch the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
And if I could just buy a package that had those two things, and then I could literally use, like, you know, antennas for King and Cairo and Como, I'd probably be fine. Like, it's the only two things I watch.
I do the same thing, because you can, like, favorite the channel. So that's the only thing that in my order, that's the only, I don't go past
that's
this.
What I did.
And I get surprised. I'm like, whoa, I have all these channels?
So I did flip around. I did watch some of the basketball. I did watch some of the hockey. But I watched a lot of the golf. And Jordan, you know, he won his last tournament, came in second in this one. He has one Grand Slam event yet to win, and that's the PGA Championship. And so, I'm pretty excited for my favorite athlete on the entire planet to do his thing.
Have you ever thought about the opposite? Like, what person has given you the most misery? Maybe as a Seattle sports fan, because I think you're probably going to say Roger Clemens, right?
Oh, no. I could probably come up with others. People that I've hated
the most.
The most
misery as a Seattle sports fan. Who has put you through the most?
Now, question. Do you mean someone who was a
It could be a coach, or was an opponent? It could be a player.
But is it somebody who did it as an opponent, or did it
Somebody who you were supposed to be cheering for, but put you through misery.
I guess in my time, that's a really good question. Aaron Curry might be up there for some people. It's going back a ways.
That's kind of why I was
thinking
about
number three overall pick. I mean, if you go back farther, I'm sure Rick Meyer or some folks like that. I mean, Rick Meyer was a number two overall pick as a quarterback and just unfortunately didn't work out. I mean, those are straight up busts. I mean, guys like Justin Smoke, Jesus Montero, right, who were acquired. Eric Bedard, who they traded away Adam Jones for. I mean, I could come up with name after name just in my time here. You know, Richie Sexson, who they spent huge money on. Adrian Beltre, who was well-liked here, but unfortunately had the huge contract and didn't win to go with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, you could probably go back a whole lot longer than that. You guys can text him in, 206-421-3776. Good question, Justin, and I'm sure plenty of texts will come in. All right, coming up next, let's buzz around the weekend. I'm sure Maura also spent nearly the same amount of time watching the Byron Nelson. Maybe not, but she'll take us through all of these Game 7s. And a huge, huge series win for the Mariners in detail next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
So, Justin, your question about the person that has caused Seattle sports fans the greatest amount of heartache.
Yeah, the most misery. Somebody you're supposed to be cheering for, not like a Mike Trout.
I think the challenge here for people is whether or not it is one moment of abject misery or an extended period of aggravation. Right? Because the one moment of abject misery, I got texters here saying Daryl Bevel, hands down, right? The to pass was the right play call, but the actual play call he made was the problem, right? Uh-huh. So Daryl Bevel is sort of, you know, one horrible moment of misery versus the Bobby Ayala, who obviously comes up every time anybody talks about, you know, poor relievers here or people like that, who were sort of low grade or sometimes high grade aggravation over a longer period of time. Then you've got more of the disappointment people, right? The busts, Brian Bosworth, Rick Meyer, Jesus Montero, Dustin Ackley. I mean, like, you could kind of go through that list. So yeah, there's some. There's a lot of different ways you can go with the athlete that made you most miserable.
I gotta keep thinking about who mine actually would be too.
So which direction of those would you go with? One moment of horror or
no?
Long
it's extended
stretches?
Periods because yeah. That's I mean the constant reminder of it is yes. What hurts the most.
Okay,
and Ackley's a good one.
Do you
that
throw
a bummer?
I see Eric Bedard. You could throw in there because not only was he I mean, he had his problems on the field and was disappointing. He was good at times.
You know what?
But he also sort of had the bad attitude to go with it.
Yeah, but maybe it's not a player. Maybe it's like a former GM.
Bill Bevesi. Bill Bevesi could certainly be on that list.
I don't know, a lot of these things, decisions were made by one person.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that any general manager's ever inflicted more harm on one team than Bill Bevesi did to the Mariners. And I say that with no malice. By all accounts, one of the nicest guys. He was gone before I got here. But one of the nicest guys in the sport. People love Bill Bevesi. But when you look at his record on drafting, his record on trades, and his record on free agent signings, you could flip through a three-sided coin to figure out which was worse.
Yeah.
Somebody's
texting Howard Schultz, no contest.
Yeah, that's a pretty
good answer.
But that one's complicated. Was it Schultz? Was it the city council? Was it this guy? Was it that guy? I don't know. Maura, what else did we miss this weekend?
Well, we'll go through the Mariners weekend here first. On Friday, because we didn't really get to talk about Marco's outing. On Friday, it took him 46 pitches to get through his first six out, that from Daniel Kramer of MLB.com. But he worked through those early struggles to make it 6 2/3 innings, giving up just one earned run and striking out 5. Ty France comes up big again in the 8th with the game tied 1-1, hitting a single to right field.
Next off on the way, swinging a ground ball fair inside the bag at first and down the right field line. Rounding third, heading home is Torrell. Up of the ball is Marte. The throw in going to be cut off by McNeil, the second baseman. A run is in, and the Mariners have a lead 2-1.
That scored Toro and ended up being the difference in that game. Talk about clutch. His 10 go-ahead or game-tying hits in the 8th inning or later since the start of 2021 trail only Aaron Judge and Gleyber Torres in the MLB.
That's pretty good. So I will be fully honest with you. I did not think there was a chance they were going to win that game as I was watching it. So I had my surgery Friday at 11:30. I was home. I got into bed. I took about a 3-hour nap because there's nothing else to do. And I was really tired and worn out, the whole thing. Yeah. And I woke up and I watched that game in bed on an iPad, which is not something I usually do. I'm more of a actual television kind of a guy. And so sort of, there's no way they're going to win this game. Scherzer was just ridiculous right from the jump. And once they gave up the first run, I was like, yeah, that might have been the margin here. I wasn't sure they were going to score a run. So to come back and Ty France with a huge, huge hit in the 8th to tie that, with the game tied to put them ahead, tremendous. And Paul Sewald doing his thing, just kind of everything coming together to just squeak out that win. It's what they needed.
Absolutely.
What they needed on Friday.
With Scherzer on the hill, that's your first thought. It's like, this is going to be a long day or a quick day. I mean, he doesn't waste time.
No.
He goes about his business.
What does he have? Does he throw 7 different pitches?
I don't.
My God, they're looking at it like, oh, well, this strikeout came on the two-seamer. This one came on the cutter. This one came on the change. This one came on the curve. This one came on the slider. None of his strikeouts came on the four-seamer, but obviously he throws that one, too. You're like, sheesh. And he really has turned himself into such a great pitcher.
You probably saw him stealing the moment for somebody on that first pitch. Did you see that on Twitter?
No. Oh, yes, I did see that.
The first pitch, and
yes.
He was like, yeah, never mind, I'm going to start.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Get off my mound.
<See ya. laughs>
Get off my mound, thanks. Yeah, that was a really fun game, and one, there have been some games this year where they lost games that you really felt like they should win. This one steals one back. That's a game you probably should have lost, and you find a way to win it. That's a big win for the M's on Friday. And good for Marco, too.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Sewald got Marco out of a jam in the 7th, striking out Starling Marte. Then he got 3 consecutive outs in the 8th, and he was a little fired up to beat his former team after the game.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up on me, and so it was pretty nice to get a little revenge today. It just was, most importantly, we got to win. That's the most important thing, but it was pretty nice. It was pretty nice.
Do you have anybody in your life that told you you couldn't do something that you, feel, compelled to, not that you would necessarily go back to that person and shove it in their face, but you'd really like to?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, a lot of the Mets fans, I was looking at their subreddit afterwards, a lot of "we literally don't even know who you are" memes floating around after that game.
It's fine.
Just fine. Motivated them.
You can know who they are, know who he is or not. He's the one who What, four consecutive outs on Friday and was nasty again yesterday?
Well, I said they took the Mike Salk tact. From what I saw, most of them were like, you were awful when you were here. Now you don't get to try to gloat in front of us. Like, you hate the former Mariners that leave and get good.
I hate former players. Like, it drives me crazy.
So you can identify with the Mets fans a little.
I can. Yeah, I really can. There's nothing worse than a player who is not that good for you, goes somewhere else and gets great. And you're like, what? What were you doing while you were here? That was obnoxious.
But we did, you had an interview with him, Sewald, in the offseason where you kind of got to hear how he felt that the Mariners really helped fine-tune some things that he needed to fix.
Yeah, they kind of gave him a strategy that he did not have. For him, it wasn't a change in stuff. It was a change in strategy, right, where he became a high fastball, low slider guy as opposed to a low fastball, low slider guy, and that seemed to completely unlock the ability in his fastball. He's always had a good slider, but it seemed to just let them play off of each other. So, yeah. Hey, sorry, Mets fans. Your organization couldn't figure out how to use this guy. Sort of like the Mariners and Chris Taylor. And their loss is our gain.
Yeah. All right, Saturday we got to see George Kirby again. He struggled a little more in his second outing, needing 89 pitches to get through four innings. He only allowed one earned run, but also only had one strikeout. Chris Bassitt for the Mets had his own issues, loading the bases in the first inning, but he made it into the sixth, giving up only one earned run. And then it was Winker that hit a three-run home run in the top of the seventh and, you know, let the Mets fans know about it.
Finally comes set from the belt. Check second. He delivers. Swung on and blasted to right field. This is well hit, and it is gone. Jesse Winker has done it. Clobbers a three-run home run, and we are tied. A brand new ball game in Flushing. The boos rain down as Jesse Winker trots around the bases. He touches third. He trots home, and the Mariners have tied it up. It is 4-4 as Jesse Winker has gone yard.
I'm surprised we had enough time during around the weekend to play the entire clip of Jesse Winker rounding the bases. It would take him like a half hour.
Yeah, he took his time for sure.
So I did not get to watch Saturday's game live. That was the night that Avery had her debut as Lord Farquaad in Shrek. She was great. Thank you.
Awesome.
And so I didn't get to watch that game. I watched the other two. I went back and I saw the highlight and I was like, is he going to start running? Oh, no, he's now going. He went from standing still to barely walking around the bases. I don't blame Shreve at all for being mad. Like, that is totally fine. But good on Winker. Just like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm going to stand here and watch this one. I'm going to pimp it to the fans. Because he does seem to have this back-and-forth, long-standing deal with Mets fans where they wave at each other, and they don't like him, and he smiles and waves at them. And
he talked about it post-game.
I'm going to be honest with you. I love them. They are an amazing group of people. They are very passionate about their team in their city. And from a guy who, born in upstate New York, big fan of that football team up there, I can understand the passion. I respect it. And this thing we got going on is special. Like I said, they're fun.
This thing we have going on. He's not talking about like his band of brothers in his locker room.
Yeah.
He's talking about his relationship with Mets fans. This thing we have is special. It's so insulting. I love it.
I went back and looked at a couple of the where that hatred started in 2021, I think is what it was. The tie game, hits a home run, kind of pimps a little bit. And then end the game in a different game. He catches a fly ball in the outfield.
Sliding catch,
lays
right
on his back and waves at fans who are like leaning over the fence.
Great.
And then, again, back into the subreddit for the Mets. Some of the insults I heard that they're screaming at Winker were, like, the nice, funny ones. Like, I bet you eat spaghetti with a fork and knife.
Right.
And, like, I bet you clapped when the plane landed at LaGuardia. Things like that.
I eat spaghetti with a fork and knife. What's wrong with that? I like to cut up my pasta. I'm not ashamed of that.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's some of the things they were yelling at him were, like, the funny,
well, that's
wholesome,
sort of who he is, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not a bad guy, but he pimped that thing. It was great. I enjoyed it. I was really hoping for a fight. Oh, well.
He also said post-game, he's like, I made friends with some guy from Barstool Sports, and then I went to that guy's account, and yeah, he was posting videos of himself yelling at Winker the whole time.
Oh, it's good.
So very interesting.
Other fans are like, I'm thrilled to have a nemesis who is an utter goofball.
Yeah.
We will boo him until the end of time and always with a smile. And also,
well, And that's sort of Mets fans, too. Like, Yankees fans, you can't have that relationship with because they're just bad people. Mets fans are mostly good people who are self-hating, right? Like, they love their team in February, March, April. And generally, by July or August, they're, like, calling each other, like, let's go down to what used to be Shea, now City Field. Let's go down to boo these guys. It's going to be great. We're gonna put bags on our head, make a sign about how much we hate our team. Like, Mets fans are fun.
It's a good one. I like the leaning into the heel.
Yeah, me too. All right, Sunday, I know... Hey,
by the way, real quick, if you really want to be a heel, how about hit the home run against Diaz in the ninth? That might have been a little bit more.
Hopefully
fun.
We'll get there. Oh, yeah. I skipped that part.
It's fine. You can just skip right over it.
Having Edwin Diaz strike out Winker on a 101-mile-hour fastball to seal the win hurt a little bit.
Not as much fun.
Sunday, I know, Saul, you will get into this more later, but Robbie Ray had that bad inning issue once again, giving up two-run triples in the fourth. He was able to retire the last seven batters he faced and made it six innings, giving up five earned runs with three walks, striking out nine.
Yeah. Anybody concerned about Robbie Ray? Is it just me? I feel like after every Robbie Ray start, I'm like, hey, anybody concerned about Robbie Ray? And everyone's like, no, not really. Okay.
How many strikeouts did he have?
He had nine in six innings, which is great. The strikeouts were back.
Mm-hmm. Just the one bad inning bug.
Right, but like... as soon as the team gets, gives him a lead, gives it right back. Like, he's just not behaving. And I don't mean the way he's, like, acting as a person, but, like, behaving on the mound like an ace pitcher. He's doing things that I don't expect out of ace pitchers. Yes, the strikeouts have been back, which is great. And hopefully that's sort of the cue for the rest of his game to come around. I have no distaste or dislike or any of that for Robbie Ray. God, I'm really just rooting for the guy to be the same player he was last year, or something close to it. Now, the one great thing you can say about Robbie Ray is the guy eats innings no matter what. Every time he goes out there, he pitches at least, five, six, seven innings, which has been incredibly important for this bullpen. And he gave them a chance yesterday. He kept them in the game enough for them to win, which is really all you can have.
I can't remember the last time we had a starting pitcher give up five and get a win.
Yeah, it's rare.
Right? Like, that was an odd thing to see. I didn't like... there's a couple times, and this is just me thinking as a former pitcher, when you start leaving the ball way up like he was. And then after that pitch, he would kind of do a little shimmy, and I'm like, he looks hurt. Like, something in the shoulder. I know that look, and I know that feeling. And so I didn't love that part, because I'm worried that that's true, and that's why the ball is floating up.
Well,
so
and it could be why the velocity was down, and now he's trying to make up for it. Yeah, I mean, those are the types of things that generally, to me, say shoulder, not elbow.
Yeah.
Right? It's usually shoulder issues. Elbow just kind of goes on.
I said it two or three times. I was like, he looks hurt. He looks uncomfortable.
It would not surprise me, Justin. Wouldn't surprise me in the least, because this is not the pitcher that we were expecting when they went out and acquired Robbie Ray for what they acquired him for.
Yeah.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, sorry. Just
moving on.
Julio
hits his second home run in the sixth, a 423-foot solo shot. Per Shannon Dreyer, our Mariners insider, Julio Rodriguez is hitting .340 over his last 14 games.
Wow, he's been one of the best players in baseball here for the last couple of weeks. That was a missile. I was watching that. Heather was sitting there, and I was like, "That's gone."
Right.
I mean, like,
vaporized.
It was not like, "Oh, I wonder if like, oh, that's a long fly." No, it's just gone. Yeah. Instantly. See you later. And Cal Raleigh's supposed to. I know you're going to get to that one in a moment. But both of them, the moment they swung it. See you later.
That's what I was going to say. Since you're playing Julio's home run, I need to know. I thought I would give the big dumper the spotlight. Cal Raleigh added a go-ahead two-run home run in the sixth.
Smith sets, fires. Swing, slug, high, deep, right field. This is on its way. This is ticketed far back. And this is gone. Almost out to the Shea Bridge in right field on the bounce. Cal Raleigh with his second home run this year. He tags Drew Smith to right. And the Mariners have taken a sixth inning lead. It's 7-5 here in Flushing.
Can you imagine if your nickname was the Big Dumper?
No.
Can you imagine if Mora's nickname was the Big Dumper? That's even funnier. Like, anybody having that nickname is funny, but Mora having it is much funnier.
I wish that he was allowed to put that on his uniform during Players Weekend.
Oh, Big Dumper. Big.
The first time I heard that, I was like, no, that's not real.
It's real. We heard Kelnick say it last year. He's like, oh, just so happy for Big Dumper. What?
Yeah.
It's an all-time nickname. Anyway, both those balls were smoked. And, yeah, yesterday got a little too close for comfort late. Unfortunately, Steckenrider just didn't have it. And Diego Castillo, thankfully, came on and got, what do you throw, 9 straight sliders to get the last 2 outs of the game.
I'm more worried about Steckenrider than I am Ray.
Well, that's probably fair. He had a good outing. He's had a couple of good outings before yesterday, but look, the difference is Drew Steckenrider came out of nowhere last year and was great, and if he goes back to turns into a pumpkin, so be it, right? I mean, like, that's going to happen with relievers, and maybe somebody else will step into that spot. Maybe the next Drew Steckenrider is Penn Murphy. Who knows?
Yeah.
Robbie Ray is your reigning Cy Young Award winner that you just paid a boatload of money to, and you're counting on to be an ace of your staff. Huge difference.
True. Totally
true. Huge difference.
Absolutely right. And things like that is where I start to miss Sadler even more.
Absolutely. And totally fair. Right? Like, again, I'm not saying that the Steckenrider thing isn't problematic, but you can get over having a bullpen guy that just doesn't repeat what he did last year because you can't expect it. You got to get Giles back. Thankfully, you got Romo back.
Right.
You know, those things will help, and you can always go acquire somebody if you need one down the stretch.
All right, we'll move into a little NBA talk. The Celtics ousted the defending champion Bucks with a 109-81 victory yesterday. Giannis is so good, but so much of it was on him. He was looking a bit tired yesterday. He became the first player in NBA playoff history to record 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in a series. And Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks coach, was asked after the game if it was perhaps too much on him.
We definitely, you know, played those guys out for as long and as much as we could, and you know, maybe that had some small impact on it. And some nights the ball, you just can't get it in the basket. And Boston was phenomenal.
Kind of the Russell Wilson in bed voice.
We got a deal.
Boston was phenomenal.
Hey, so, by the way, both Game 7s kind of busts yesterday, right? Both of them were blowouts. Is Jason Tatum? I saw Nick Wright, who I follow and I like, and he and I are friendly, and I like, he knows and really deeply cares about basketball and gets a lot of the drama behind the NBA, right? And sort of the rankings of who's the best right now and who's fighting with whom.
Yeah.
And he has Jason Tatum as a top 5 player in the game right now. Is that true? Jason Tatum one of the 5 best players in the NBA?
I think down the stretch this year, he became that.
Wow.
Yeah. He wasn't probably the whole season.
As I said, Celtics were the best team I watched this year. I only watched one game, but they won it. And so I'm not surprised to see them.
For the most part, it's been on his back. Yesterday, Grant Williams, who has kind of underwhelmed for the Celtics in that series, had a career night. He hit 7 threes. But yeah, overall, it's been Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Where did he go to college?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. I don't remember. I don't remember him in college. He's like one of those guys that seemed to just sort of
appear.
He went to Duke. He's a Duke guy.
Tatum.
I don't really remember him at Duke, though, for whatever reason. That's probably on me.
I thought you were asking about Grant Williams.
No. I was asking about Tatum. Yeah.
Yeah, Tatum's Duke.
Okay. Well, there you go.
All right. Well, and then we'll move into your Grizz.
My Grizz? Oh, they lost.
Your Grizz got knocked out on Friday, 110-96. But it was pretty admirable without Ja Morant. They put up a fight.
Yeah, they're not really my Grizz without Ja Morant.
They had a couple of guys score over 30 points. Do you think you can name any of them?
Drew Brooks or something Brooks.
Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks. I have a friend
30
named,
points.
I have a friend named Drew Brooks. So Dylan Brooks and Steven Adams had a bunch of rebounds.
Steven Adams had 10 rebounds.
Yes.
Desmond Bane had 35 points.
Desmond Bane, great in Batman. I watched most of the Batman over the weekend, Josh.
Oh, good.
I haven't finished it yet. I still got about a half hour left. Heather and I are watching it in 3 installments.
It's a long movie.
It's three hours long. It's fantastic.
It's very good.
I absolutely love it. I love the way it's shot. It's
Thank
great.
You. I'm glad you do.
I like it more than the Memphis Grizzlies.
Fair. I will allow that.
Especially without Ja Morant on their team. There's not much to watch without him. Dylan Brooks. That's what I meant.
Oh, and I should mention that the Celtics begin their series with the Heat on Tuesday.
Yes.
The Warriors, who the Splash Brothers went off for a combined 59 points yesterday, and they had 3 other players rack up double-digit points. I'm sorry, on Friday. They will now take on the Mavericks, who just absolutely obliterated the Suns.
I saw that, yeah. And again, credit to Nick Wright. He's been saying for a while the Mavericks would show up in the playoffs and embarrass some teams that thought that they were the big dog. And he was right. They took it to him in Game 7 yesterday. So
yeah, 123-90. But that actually, I think, looks better than it was at halftime. Was just
as you know, the other NBA team that I follow somewhat closely through Twitter is the Kings, because of my friends in Sacramento, Carmichael Dave, who's the morning show host there. And the fact that they passed on Luka is so sad. Like, they had the pick. They could have had Luka Doncic, or they could have had whoever they took, Marvin Bagley, I think. The fact that they made that, it's so sad. He's so ridiculously good.
35 points and 10 rebounds yesterday.
That's so sad. Right. Feel bad for
actual franchise-changing players like that.
Yeah, and the Kings are long-suffering. I mean, they haven't had a good team since Chris Webber was there, man. They haven't had a good team since Jason Williams. It's been forever. They never make the playoffs. That's like,
I know we're almost done here. I just want to give an honorable mention. You mentioned the Flames Stars game yesterday to the Stars goalie, Jake Oettinger. He's 23 years old, 64 saves.
Yes.
And his team lost.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
Yeah.
Johnny Hockey. Got to stop Johnny Hockey in the clutch, man.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Gaudreau.
Yes.
Got him.
So, and Southern, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about what happened in the Byron Nelson, I assume, Jordan Spieth.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
What do you mean, go ahead? This isn't written into
it's
your...
it's definitely big. It should probably lead need to know.
I told him if I go to ESPN's homepage and there's like a big golf story there, then I put it in around the weekend.
Well, there's
going
to be this
anything,
week, I promise, then... because they head to the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. Jordan Spieth coming off a win and a second place finish in his last two
There you go,
starts.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Maura. That was a great weekend. Thank you for taking us around the weekend. As I said, I am surprised that this also wasn't around the weekend, but I got perhaps the greatest preview of old age yesterday, and it was truly humbling. So I'll tell you about that, plus the under-the-radar signing, keeping the Mariners afloat right now, next. Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710, salesports.com.